Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
So, maybe you're a student and you're looking to get a bit of experience under your belt. Maybe you're a retiree with a bit of extra time, keen to give back, or a newcomer to an area wanting to connect. Volunteering can unite us, no matter our background, no matter our generation, no matter our experience. And there are so many major events that happen in an Australian summer, like the Oz Open, like Surf Lifesaving, like Grand Prix. And lending a hand is keeping Aussies connected with a bit of pride and a bit of purpose as well. If you volunteer for those major events, it also means you give back without the strings of a long-term commitment. But the sad thing is we know the need for volunteers doesn't stop after a summer of sport, surf and sand. So how do we go about turning a one-off volunteer into a lifelong giver? Now, Dr. Pam Kapalidis is Senior Lecturer in Sport and Recreation Management at La Trobe Uni, been giving this topic a great deal of thought. She's with us tonight to talk about what good volunteer management looks like, why it's getting harder to find everyday volunteers, and beyond those helping at our major events, what else are volunteers doing so well right around Australia? Pam, welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
I should just say, I do want to hear from you as well if you're listening. Are you volunteering this summer at one of the events we've been talking about? One of the big ones, maybe one of the small ones. If you put up your hand to volunteer in the past for something, everything from the Commonwealth Games to the Olympics to anything big and small, tell me what the experience was like. And very keen, if you are a regular volunteer, tell me what it's like to be a long-term volunteer. How do you find that time? What sort of stuff are you doing? And is the commitment working for you? 1-300-800-222. 1-300-800-222. You can text in 0467-922-702. Pam, I mean, summer months, jam-packed, as I was saying, so many events happening. Talk me through who are the faces of our summer volunteers.
Oh, Nick, that's a hard question to start off with. We have lots of volunteers and lots of different people volunteer, from young people as young as 16, being ball kids at the Australian Open, all the way to, you know, currently you talked about earlier, the bushfires that we're currently experiencing, you know, our CFA volunteers. So we have so many people doing so many remarkable things. And to be honest, Australia wouldn't function without our volunteers. So, you know, they keep the heartbeat of our industry. And when I'm talking about industry, I'm not just talking about, you know, manufacturing. I'm talking about hospitals, sport clubs, committees, all sorts of things, surf lifesaving, the events that we have all summer, winter. Music festivals are really big as well, where we see a lot of our younger volunteers. So I think we can't sort of say that there's one particular type of volunteer. I think depending on what the program is, the event is, or the organisation is, will depend on what sort of volunteers they have.
Pam, I know you've said that good volunteer management starts with understanding who your volunteers are. I do think the managers often don't get spoken about in the equation when we're talking about volunteers, but clearly that's also an essential part of making the experience work for everyone.
Absolutely. And often those managers are volunteers themselves as well. So, you know, sometimes they're managing as volunteers themselves. So, you know, the skills are often difficult to get, to have, but they are doing remarkable. You know, a lot of them, we're quite lucky in Australia that we've got some state bodies like Volunteering Victoria here in Victoria, and a national body of Volunteering Australia that often have lots of resources that organisations could use, to, you know, from templates to writing job descriptions to how to run a committee. We also have lots of short courses that they run as well, that often some of these volunteer managers can do for free, because keeping in mind that often they don't have a lot of money, these organisations, and that's why we have volunteers, because we can't pay a lot of staff, so we need our volunteers to do a lot of the work that, you know, our society requires.
Pam, when it comes to those managers, I guess how essential is it making sure that they are simpatico with the volunteers they're working with? I mean, that everyone's on the same page. I know in the business world, you know, you can have a bad manager, but you still got to go to work. If you're a volunteer, you could just say no thank you at some point if it wasn't working.
You can, but surprisingly, Nick, you'll find that even with bad managers there, the volunteers will still turn up, because it's what they care, you know, they look at the mission of the organisation and they look at what motivates them. So even if they're managed really poorly, which, you know, sometimes happens, it doesn't always happen, but it does happen, they will still turn up because they believe in the cause, they believe in, you know, giving back. But also it's the social aspect. So if you're having a really horrible time with your manager, it doesn't matter, you turn up and you know, with your fellow volunteers, you're having a laugh, you're sharing the burden, you're getting out there and doing the job. So even though we might have bad volunteer managers, which we don't often have it because they're also giving of their time really often, they still turn up, you know. And I've been in many volunteer roles where the people looking after the organisation are not fantastic, but I still turn up because I believe in the cause and I believe in giving back and doing something good. So that's often what we find with volunteering.
Pam, we've got so many texts and calls coming in. I'm just going to take a few of these. On that topic of bad managers, David, unfortunately, saying he volunteered at motorsports over the years and did not have a good experience. He says he was treated like absolute garbage by management, which is a sad thing to hear, David. And I'm actually sorry you had to go through that experience. 1300 800 222. Ross on the line. Ross, welcome to Nightlife.
Hi, thanks for the program, mate.
Oh, yes. No, thanks for calling in to have a talk. So tell me about your volunteering work.
Well, I've been involved in an organisation called the Bennetbrook Railway in a major recreation and conservation reservation on the outskirts of Perth for over 40 years. And I went there at the very beginning. My wife and I, before we met, used to individually go out to a picnic area there called Mussel Pool. And on the way home from a picnic in the hills with our young family one day, we dropped in just to have a look. And my young son came running over to me and said, "Daddy, Daddy, there's a railway over there." I said, "No, mate, there's no railways here." Because there never had been. Anyway, he said, "Yes, there is. Yes, there is." So I went over and had a look and followed this little single track around to a building. And there in the building were all, well, there was about six of these guys. And they were starting to build this railway with the help of the Planning Commission in WA. And I said, "If you want a hand, give me a yell." And they sent me a membership form sometime later. And over 40 years later, I'm still there. I'm a life member.
Wow.
And we built a 6-kilometre railway with heritage buildings, locomotives, carriages, from nothing.
Ross, are you there every week, a couple of days a week? What's your kind of commitment like?
I'm not there that much now.
Right.
No, I'm 77, so I go out occasionally to catch up with people and say hello, but I'm very proud of what we've achieved, and it was great to be a part of building this special railway. And we had an accolade from a publication called Light Railway News of Australia, and the editor came across and visited our railway some few years ago, and he said, "There's no doubt that the Bennetbrook Railway is one of the premier narrow gauge, it's only 2 foot wide, Heritage Lines in Australia, and I was extremely proud to be a part of that.
You should be incredibly proud. Ross, thank you for sharing that story. And Pam, you know, not to throw it all on Ross, but what a dream volunteer, 40 years of commitment on almost a whim, just something he thought was fascinating and worth putting time into.
That's amazing, isn't it, Nick? And that's not uncommon. It's often, you know, you hear of that, particularly in recreation and sport.
Mm.
You know, you hear of a president of a sport club that has been there for 40, 50 years, but they started when their children were there and they've continued because of that legacy that they want to leave for others. And it's similar to what Ross was saying, you know, just went along, gave someone a hand, built this amazing railway, same thing with the sport club. You know, built this amazing sport club but wants to leave it for others as well to take over as a legacy. So, yeah, it's an amazing thing that we have here in Australia, having so many people putting their hands up just to give a hand.
1-300-800-222. Please give a call and share experiences like Ross did. We're talking to Dr. Pam Capolides, Senior Lecturer at Sport and Recreation Management at La Trobe University. We are talking volunteering with a bit of a look at particularly some of those major events that we see right around Australia and how important the volunteer community is to getting those up and running. And that's a really good point, Pam. Like, you know, we don't see necessarily that sort of four-decade-long commitment. In fact, my understanding is actually it's getting harder and harder to find everyday volunteers in Australia.
It is getting harder, but the ones that have been there for a while are sticking around. We're still finding that. And there's a bit of a myth that younger people are not wanting to volunteer, but they are volunteering. They're volunteering in just a different way. We're not seeing them volunteer as much as, you know, going, like Ross was saying, to a railway club, but they might be doing things online.
Mm.
You know, I work at a university and I see a lot of my students volunteering, tutoring with underprivileged communities, that they might do that online. They are working, you know, Meals on Wheels, Surf Life Saving, all those sort of things, coaches, officials. They're more the one-off, turning up, doing it and leaving rather than being there, you know, for a whole day or being there a couple of times a week. So it fits into their schedule. So even though we're saying that we're seeing less volunteers putting their hands up, it's a bit of a myth because we're just saying a different way that people are wanting to volunteer. And so organisations need to think about how do they make it attractive for those both sets of volunteers, I guess, for those everyday volunteers that they need, but also those volunteers that might want to do a one-off or a couple of times a year.
Pam, some more texts coming in. This one from Russell saying, I was living in Broome at the time and I was a volunteer assisting with the Olympic torch relay. Drove the vehicle containing the mother flame, which the torches are lit from each day. Russell, I witnessed one of the iconic images from the entire relay, a Cable Beach sunset and the silhouette of a local strapping First Nations lad holding the flame aloft on a camel. Russell says it was goosebump stuff. Even the security guys in the vehicle were silenced by the event. I was hoping we'd hear from someone who was around for 2000 because that was having been in Sydney at the time, having seen how many people were around there, it felt like a real key moment for that intersection of making time to volunteer because of the pride that was attached to it, Pam.
Absolutely, and that's what we often see. And I don't know if you've ever heard of what we call the grey nomad volunteers.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I have.
So we found at the Sydney Olympics that the grey nomads were the biggest component of volunteers at the Sydney Olympics because they wanted to be part of those goosebump moments and they had time. We also found that same group then, because I did the research with the Commonwealth Games at the Gold Coast and I spoke to many of those grey nomads who had volunteered both at the Sydney Olympics and then followed on to the Athens Olympics and then followed off to the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games.
Huh.
So, yeah, so they became, they used their holiday to go and volunteer as well. So they used it as a way to, you know, have a bit of volunteering, but also have a bit of a holiday as well. So, and they all knew each other. So you often found a group going together as grey nomad volunteers at all these separate premier events, I guess.
See, that's
which
really, I was just going to say, Pam, that's really interesting because we often think of the act of volunteering as a way of entering a community, finding a bit of companionship, finding people to be around, but they're actually turning their own already existing community into a force for volunteering.
Mm-hmm. And they book their holidays with each other to go to these events. And it's amazing because I spoke to quite a few at the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games and they said, you know, they love the social aspect. They love the fact that they could volunteer in sports that they enjoyed and that they also got training to then go and do ongoing volunteering at other places as well.
1-300-800-222. I'd love to hear some more stories of volunteering, whether it's been a major event, whether it's a small community group that you just have been clued into for a while, whether it's a bit of volunteering that you make time for, or as I said before, if you're in a situation where volunteering has just become such second nature, you can't imagine a world without it. 1-300-800-222. Otherwise, 0467-922-702. Pam, outside of the special cases like the Grey Nomad volunteers, do we see one-off volunteers at major events turning into lifelong volunteers on any kind of appreciable statistic?
Yeah, we do see some. We don't see a major proportion of those turning into ongoing volunteers because those volunteers tend to want to do what we call one-off or episodic volunteering. So they're generally, you know, might have full-time study or full-time jobs, and so they see an event as an opportunity to give back, but it's not ongoing. So even though we often will see, you know, organisations like the International Olympic Council wanting to leave legacy after a major Olympics or Commonwealth Game event, we don't see a lot of that happening. We do see some, but most of the volunteers are just wanting a one-off experience. They're not wanting that long-term commitment.
Is that because I'm not matching volunteering to the way, I guess, our lives work in a modern world, how busy and fragmented they often are?
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. Huh. So, you know, we're busy. Often families, particularly at the cost of living at the moment, is, you know, putting a burden on families. So giving back and volunteering is becoming harder in that way because if you take a family situation, generally parents have to work. Both parents, if they're together, have to work, be able to take kids to sport, do all this extracurricular stuff as well as work. And so we have a society that's very time poor and finding less and less time to do that ongoing volunteering. So that one-off is a lot easier for those sort of busy lives that we lead. But saying that, on the flip side, it's quite interesting. You know, I often hear from volunteers who say busy people often do put their hand up to do more.
Oh.
So they will volunteer and do more. So it's really hard to say what actually happens because I know people who might be volunteering for Meals on Wheels. They then volunteer for the Surf Life Saving Club in their area. They might be a CFA volunteer as well as going to the school and reading to kids at school. So they could be doing a number of things as well as working and having a family because they want to give back to their community or they want to be part of that community because we've often found that, you know, over the years we used to really know our neighbours in our neighbourhood, and that's not as common anymore. So volunteering is a way for people to connect to their community in that way. So we often find that volunteers will stay in their own community and volunteer there.
Dr. Pam Capilides is our guest for the first hour. We're talking volunteering right around the country. She's a senior lecturer in sport and recreation management at La Trobe University. And we've talked a bit about volunteering and community. Just to take it back to the big events, there's been more than a couple of texts basically asking, is that not work for free when a large event like an Oz Open, like a Grand Prix, they make money? Should they be paying people? Is there an argument to be made that there shouldn't be volunteers for an event like that, Pam?
Good question. But I think even if they're making lots of money, a lot of it isn't going into the infrastructure of the actual events. Hmm. It's going more to prize money rather than I don't know whether the tennis players or, you know, what less payment for them to be paying their volunteers. But I think it goes back to the ethos of an event. We've always had volunteers at these events, and I think it's one of those things that it will change the environment if they're all paid rather than volunteers as well. You know, if I think about the Ball Kids, for instance, that's a real institution. If you're a Ball Kid at the Australian, at the Tennis Open, you're highly regarded by your peers as, wow, you got a really good, and it good role, but it's actually hard to get that role as well. So it's a bit of a kudos as well to that person getting that role to say that I was a ball kid at the Australian Open. Same as working at the Olympics. Now, I spoke to a couple of people I know who volunteered at the Paris Olympics and the Paralympics. And they said, the experience is so different to being paid because they really are giving themselves freely and they're able to pick and choose what they want to do based on what they choose to do when they fill in their application, so they can say yes or no to things rather than if you're paid, you're going to have to do it, right?
All right. Hey, we got a couple of calls in, Pam, which we'll just go to. Linda, welcome to Nightlife.
Oh, hi.
Hi, thanks for calling in. Tell me about your volunteering.
I was quite interested. I'm just sort of laying in bed, actually, but it was rather nice because I just heard on the radio, this is 25 years ago, needing some help volunteering at City Care Network, where I met the most delightful lady who I used to take shopping fortnightly. And I worked with her because she wasn't very nimble, and I took her shopping, and in the 6 years I was with her, developed such a friendship. She then became too old, she died, and I spoke at her funeral. And then from then there, I went into Uniting Communities, but then it was a place called Hackney Mission, where I was a welfare counsellor. And I worked there for 13 years, just helping underprivileged people. And it was one of the most humbling things and taught me so much. And I just grew so much. It was like not what I gave to volunteering, but what volunteering gave to me. And then I moved house to a totally different area, and now I am a volunteer at the Flinders Hospital as a guide. And I've been doing that now for 6 years and absolutely love that. And because people come into a hospital and they're stressed and they say, I have to go to a clinic, or they say, I'm lost. And I say, no, you're not, because I've just found you, you know, and I'll take them to their clinic and take them to where they go. And, you know, I've had hugs. We all do. We get the same thing from people who are so stressed out, because hospitals can be scary places when you're already a bit nervous and you don't know where you're going, and you walk in and then somebody virtually takes your hand and, again, I'm the one that comes home so fulfilled. You don't need to give me money. Just let me keep helping.
Linda, is this 25 years you've been doing this for after hearing a random chat on the radio?
I know. I know. Well, I'm 75 now, and I was just sort of in my late 40s, early 50s. I was at gym working out, and I heard this call for help. And I thought, you know, my life's okay. I need to help someone out. But that elderly lady, honestly, I learned so much. Like, she was 30 years older than me. And we went to the market. We had coffee after. We laughed. She shared secrets with me, and I shared secrets with her. And then when it stopped and I spoke at her funeral, it was so sad. And then there was something missing in my life. So I went to, I learned that Hackney, that Uniting Communities needed help. They put me on a counselling course. I loved that. And then for 13 years, I did that. Then moved house. And as I say, I'm in the Flinders Hospital now, and I just love it. And I just would encourage anybody to give some volunteering. Don't think you're working for nothing. Just think of you're growing as a person.
Linda, I'm so glad you called in. That is a beautiful story. The hospital is incredibly lucky to have you. And Pam, that line, Linda was saying, it's not what I did as a volunteer. It was what volunteering did for me.
Yep. And I feel the same way, Linda. When I volunteer, I come back, could be dead tired from what I was doing volunteering, but so happy with, you know, what I achieved and you know, that I was also given something as Linda, you know, I'm really fulfilled and encouraged to keep going because you're helping out or you're learning a new skill, all those sort of things, like Linda said. Now, she was put through a counselling course. I mean, that's amazing.
It really is. I mean, that's an investment in a volunteer.
Ooh, absolutely.
Keep the calls coming in, 1-300-800-222. Thank you, Annie in Port Lincoln, saying, I and my other half, we're retired, but we volunteer for Blaze Aid. We've travelled all over the countryside, making lifelong friendships and helping people get their lives back after a bushfire. I mean, Annie, Blaze Aid do amazing work. I mean, very timely to be talking about it right now, particularly what we've seen in terms of fires right around the country. So thank you. 0467 922 702 if you want to keep texting. David in Mount Waverley. David, welcome to Nightlife.
Good morning. Good morning.
Not yet. Morning on Not
the,
yet.
I've got morning on the brain, brother.
You've done a bit of volunteering.
Evening, Nick and Pam. Listen, I don't want to drag it down, but my experience of volunteering for major events in Australia is you fill out the application form, you go to the interview, you've got what they want, and they turn around and say to you, no, you're not good enough. We don't need you.
Oh, has that happened to you a few times, David?
It's happened to me many, many times. I applied to the Sydney Olympics. I went to 3 interviews. And the last one, they said, no, we don't need you. I've done a lot of motor racing where I volunteered up until last year. And the last year, this past year, I've decided to give it away because of management and the way that they treat the volunteers.
Right. So you found it to be a difficult situation in that case?
Basically, yeah. What happens is that the management don't know what they've got and they just treat them like, pardon the expression, like slaves.
Right.
You're out there doing the job for them. Like you're showing customers to a seat or you are at the gate checking tickets and you're supposed to be looked after with a drink, a meal, and you get a break, get out of the sun. Doesn't happen.
Yeah, you felt like your time was being taken advantage of by the sounds of it, David, but thank you for sharing that. Pam, it does go back to what you were saying about management and the right fit with volunteers.
Yeah, and sorry to hear that, David. It is disappointing when you're giving up your time that you're not getting, you know, the basic of a break. I think it does go back to that management issue of often in the bigger organisations, you often have people who are paid. And to be honest, I think volunteer managers often are better managers of volunteers if, one, they have been a volunteer themselves, to start with, but also if they are a volunteer, because once they become, I guess, paid management, they think very differently about volunteers. They think of them just as paid staff, and unfortunately they're not paid staff, and they can say no, they can be flexible, they need incentives, they need support, they need the breaks, and often paid managers or volunteers sometimes forget that, because they're caught up in what's happening, and they just often will have both paid staff and volunteers, and so they put them all in one basket and treat them all the same as paid staff, and it's not the case. Volunteers need a little more nurturing than paid staff.
It's interesting. Do you think some of the big events are getting better at recognising that now and approaching management in a way that more befits that?
Yes and no. I'm sitting on the fence with that, because I think, for instance, the people I spoke to at the Paralympics said their experience was fantastic, but it was because it was in such an amazing environment. But they weren't getting the supports as volunteers, but it was just the environment around them kept them going. But they weren't getting those breaks. They weren't getting the meals.
Wow. You know, wow.
They had poor training, but it was the environment. They were like, you know, one of them was volunteering under the Eiffel Tower. I mean, how iconic is that as a volunteer? So they said, regardless of what was happening around me, I was there in awe of the experience that I was experiencing and helping others experience that, you know, the Olympic Games. So I don't think, I often think smaller organisations are much better at managing their volunteers than bigger organisations, because they get lost in the bigger environment. So, you know, if you've got a smaller organisation like a sport club or a, you know, the CFA in your local area or the Meals on Wheels in your local area, schools, they often manage their volunteers better because they know them personally. Whereas in those bigger events or those bigger hospitals, although, you know, we just heard from Linda and she's saying she's had a great experience at her hospital, but in the bigger environments, they tend to get less supports and lost in the environment.
We've got about, I'm going to say 14, 13 minutes until the next ABC News. Our guest is Dr. Pam Capoletti. She's the Senior Lecturer at Sport and Recreation Management at La Trobe Uni. We're talking about the work that volunteers done. I've said, call up and share. Rob's done that from Bendigo. Rob, welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you.
Where do you volunteer?
I'm a tram conductor on the tourist trams in Bendigo.
The famous Bendigo trams.
Yep. I started about 12 months ago. A friend of mine was a driver. He's been driving for about 40 years, and he said, because I lost my job about 18 months ago, and he said, why don't you become a volunteer? So I started it, and I absolutely love it. I am just learning so much about all the trams, how they were saved in Bendigo, meeting people from all over the world. And the people who run the place are just amazing to me. It's about 60 people work there, and we're just all one big happy family. It's just fantastic.
I'm so
love it.
So glad to hear a really happy story. Rob, I love that. And, you know, the Tourism Volunteer Network, Pam, is an essential one as well.
It certainly is. And, you know, it's interesting Rob mentioned, you know, a friend sort of referred him. You know, that's the number one way that people volunteer, get recruited, is word of mouth.
Really?
So,
really?
You know, because if I'm happy as a volunteer and I tell my friends, they're going to come along because they know that I'm giving them an opportunity that's going to be okay. So generally word of mouth is how we get our volunteers to join an organisation.
I think that's incredible. I'm just trying to think of my volunteer work. One was, they've all been word of mouth. People saying, if you've got time, this is a group that could use a bit of time from you. And it's been incredible every single time. 1-300-800-222. Deb in St Kilda. Deb, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I think I break all the rules on everything that you've said. I'm a rebel with a cause. I was unwell before COVID, and I went into hospital, and I spent 3 years in and out of like hospitals, psych wards, community living. It was very difficult for 3 years, and I had 2 years of COVID. So basically 5 years of not being, you know, in and of the world. So to start off, to get my confidence back, I lived in tracksuits and active wear for 5 years. So I started an op shop.
Oh.
And I had a panic attack on the first day. And I sort of, my sister came and her partner to support me, like to be there. So that's where I started to work in an op shop. And one of the reasons was to get into the community and also to start dressing in normal clothes. So that was a stepping stone. And I did two op shops, and I did one for 3 years and then one in a more funky one for a year. And it was just fantastic for confidence. And I spent more time in the change room trying on clothes in between customers than I did serving. It was just a hoot. And I got confidence about dressing. And then I thought, what is my passion? What was missing when I was in hospital? And the power of touch. I used to do massage. So what I did, I matched my passion with what I saw was a need. And for sort of 6 to 12 months, I knocked on a door that where I wanted to work. I chose my spot. I didn't want, no one suggested it. It was my driven. I wanted to work there. And I now work at a women's mental health centre in Elsternwick in Melbourne. And it's a 30-bed for women for 2 weeks who stay there for respite.
Mm-hmm.
And I went from one afternoon to two afternoons. And I've done it for 18 months, so like up until like this year. And honestly, it's just been a privilege. And, you know, when I had the interview, they said, why do you want to do it? Do I want to give back? And they said, well, everyone wants to do that. And that was a really woke answer. But it's become like these women, you know, you hear stories, you see things on Current Affair and all these things, and you think, yep, these are heroes. These women, honestly, have taught me so much, but their stories are incredible. And, you know, it's changed my life, and I'm so grateful. And every time I go in, and I've been given a bit of a long rope, so I go into community area and I do massage. Wow. And I say, this is my menu. Like, it's growing from I wanted to do feet, and they were like, oh, really? So my menu is feet, hands, neck and shoulders. And then because it's such a vulnerable sort of exchange, they tell me their whole story.
Yeah, you end up making that incredible connection. I mean, Deb, I just love that story of how much it brought back to you, how much it helped you find a space in the world again. And Pam, once more, what do we take away from the volunteering we do? Quite a lot. Remy's texted in from Shepparton, where I am, and he says, great topic. The amount of amazing volunteers throughout Australia in junior sports competitions is always incredible to see. Remy says, something I think is likely in contrast to other places in the world, and something I think Aussies should be very proud of, is how much we step up. I grew up here, but through work, I coached some junior footy in Darwin. I'd suggest the most rewarding thing I've done so far. When we talk about what a community can take away from volunteering, what that community engagement does for the people volunteering, for the group, but broader for the community as well, Pam, I mean, it's hard to measure, but it's enormous.
Oh, it is. And, you know, we measure it around what we call, you know, social impact, the impact of, you know, giving back to society. It's the glue that puts people together. Like, if you think about a tragic event, even if we think about, you know, something like a bushfire event or the floods, you often see communities coming together to volunteer, to clean up, to help each other. It's the glue that keeps us together. It's the opportunity to just give a hand to your neighbour. It's that informal volunteering as well that, you know, we haven't even touched on, Nick. But, you know, we're talking about formal volunteering here, but there are so many people who do things that are informally done, like, you know, I don't know, taking their elderly neighbour some food every weekend, or taking them out to go and get their groceries. That's a form of volunteering that we don't gauge or we don't see. We often see it particularly in communities of, you know, newly arrived refugees or called communities when they help each other become established in this, you know, new environment or new community or new country. So although we've been talking a lot about formal volunteering, we also forget that there's a lot of informal volunteering that goes a long way to keeping our community connected.
Jamie takes it in from Central Victoria, where we have quite a number of very significant fires at the moment. And Jamie says, we should all sleep safely tonight, knowing that there will be thousands of CFA volunteers out tomorrow, saving property, saving lives. Such an unselfish group. They have been treated poorly lately, but they are morally obligated to turn up and serve. Jamie, thank you for doing that. And I guess on the same note, Tracy calling in from Lismore. Tracy, welcome to Nightlife. Tracy, you still with me? No, I'm disappointed we've lost Tracy, but apparently she is the youngest captain at the RFS in her brigade ever, and I think that is an incredible achievement. Nanette's in Cairns. Nanette, welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you. I've done volunteering since 1958. I started teaching swimming. I'm 80 years of age, and so I started when I was in my late teen or early teens, teaching swimming at North Sydney Olympic Pool. And then they did a Herald Learn to Swim campaign for adults as well. Then I had 20 years helping people at Mona Vale Hospital who had disabilities. And currently I am 3, sometimes 4 days a week at the Salvation Army locally in Cairns, and also president of the community centre, local community centre, and I get a lot of joy out of all of it.
I can hear the joy in your voice, and no one would do as much of you as you've been doing without it meaning so much to you. Can you imagine a world without volunteering on your side, Nanette?
No, I couldn't. I mean, in the meantime, I held down jobs, brought up children, and still did, you know, all of that, and still married to the same man for 57 years, so he's had to put up with it too.
I bet he has absolutely loved it and been as proud of it as you are. Pam, a couple of people just texting. We're going to run out of time, so in just a minute or so, just many people asking, you know, do we feel that some of these big organisations pay enough attention, obviously, to volunteers and their safety? Someone even pointing out, you know, what happens to, say, a volunteer firefighter that gets injured? It's obviously on the mind of anywhere that's accepting volunteers.
I think they try their hardest, absolutely. You know, we have standards and we have policies that that are put in place, like organisations like Volunteering Australia, where they encourage organisations to make sure people are trained and supported and have the right gear. But unfortunately, just like in any environment, we are putting ourselves at risk, particularly in some of these volunteer roles that we've mentioned. And things can happen, but I think organisations mostly do the best they can and to keep people safe.
And I think that's an important element of it. Pam, we've run out of time, but you've been fantastic this evening, and thank you so much.
Nick, can I just say that one last thing? I just wanted to point out that this year is International Volunteer Year, so it's an international recognised opportunity to celebrate our volunteers, and I'm hoping that we're going to be able to celebrate all these wonderful people and what they're doing very big in a very big way. I think they deserve.
I hope we will too. And Pam, thank you. Dr. Pam Capaliti, she's Senior Lecturer in Sport and Recreation Management at La Trobe University. We were talking about volunteers. So sorry if I didn't get time to take your call before the news, but Tom also saying, I've been a volunteer for more than 40 years. Volunteers for major sporting events are so good, but there are so many volunteers in my local area who never receive the same sort of kudos. And he goes on to list so much of the work that people are doing. You can just throw a stone and you will find an organisation, a group, somewhere that benefits from the amazing Australians putting their hand up and saying, I will volunteer.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.